morning, witches. This is the Witch Daily Show with host Tanya Brown. We are coming to you from New Orleans, Louisiana, to offer you a bite-sized bit of magic. Our 20-minute-ish episodes are the perfect start to your day. So sit back, relax, and enjoy your pop of magic.
All right, so we have a special segment today. We are talking with Christopher Penzack. He is the co-founder of the Temple of Witchcraft religious nonprofit organization and creator of the Temple of Witchcraft Mystery School and Seminary Education Programs. Developed through his extensive work as an award-winning author, ritualist, and minister, the educational core of the program comes from his sixth book and CD set Temple of Witchcraft series. With a current focus on expanding the culture of the witchcraft community, he co-founded Copper Cauldron, an independent publishing company, to support his own vision and that of the Temple of Witchcraft community. Today, Christopher continues to teach internationally, write, see private clients, design jewelry, and travel to sacred sites with small groups. So, hi, how are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm well, so excited to have you on. When we first started the podcast, we had like made a post of like, oh, who are some people you guys would like to see come on? And like, you were easily one of the first few people that were mentioned. So
cool. That's awesome. Thank you.
Very happy to have you on. So you've written over 24 books on witchcraft, which, wow, that's just is a lot. And it's really impressive. But you do have a new book coming out. It is called The Witch's Hut. Could you give us a little bit of information about this new book?
Sure. It's probably the strangest book that I've written. It's not a novel, but it's not a how-to book, which is what I'm usually known for. It's very much a modern parable of trying to take the essence of witchcraft and the teachings of it and put it into a format that people who might not want to do the techniques or would be intimidated to sit down and be like, oh, I have to light a candle, I have to meditate, I have to do that. How can I get the philosophy across to people? So it's done in a little bit of a parable form. So it's a little bit of a short story. It's not a full novel, but I'm not really, don't necessarily think of myself as a fiction writer. So it was interesting that this one kind of came out this way.
No, that is interesting. And I think you're right. You know, I think some people forget that witchcraft isn't all about do the spell, do the ritual, but there is a life philosophy kind of obviously spiritual aspect of it where we do hope that over time we learn these lessons, become better human beings through this practice. So I really love the idea of having a book that is trying to teach that part of it and not so much the red candle, green candle part of it.
Yeah, I think a witchcraft is an orientation to the world. So this is a helpful introduction for people who might not quite see it that way.
In the book, you do have a character, the witch. Who or what inspired kind of this character, and how did she evolve from when you first thought of the idea to when the book came out?
That's a great question. I don't think I have an answer for you. I think, you know, I didn't have a clear intention even when I first started writing this that it was going to be a book, you know, so I don't know. She kind of evolved organically, I guess, is the best way to think of it. You know, the witch for me is just, you know, the archetypal witch or the expression of the witch soul. And she just kind of came out as a voice in the back of my head, you know, having a conflict with somebody and really kind of questioning it with somebody in the witchcraft community. And I'm just thinking like, we get so othered, you know, by the general population, and I hate it when we other each other, you know? And so I was thinking about blame and victimization and witch hunts and, you know, that whole sort of thing. And this kind of medieval image of the witch kind of from the witchcraft trial times kind of came out as a voice, but I just, you know, I read a lot of things in my journal. I read a lot of things for creativity that doesn't necessarily ever turn into a book. And that was really maybe the first quarter of it kind of came out through that conflict. But I didn't necessarily have a vision of who she is or where she's at. She's the witch, you know, so she's just at that she's always been there. She's always been at the edge of the village of my mind, I guess. And this is just kind of her story and how it came out.
I love that, the edge of the village of my mind. That is such a great way to describe, like, the archetype of the witch.
Thank you.
In your afterword, you mentioned that the witch character, that she kind of helped you, you know, shape the story, adding that you learned things from her throughout the process. What is one of the things that you kind of learned as you were working through this?
One that was really interesting was she used this whole metaphor as I was writing. And, you know, I don't think I'm channeling an entity. I think it's just the creative process. But what came out of it was this whole image of the different selves that we have and how we take ownership of ourselves. And she used the metaphor of a pearl. And she, like in the story, she takes out this little leather sachet, and inside it, she digs out this pearl, and she holds up the pearl to everybody she's speaking to, and talks about the pearl as like the higher self. And so it has both. I have difficulty with a lot of the metaphors that, you know, say we're just reflections of each other, because I don't think we're just reflections of each other, or I think it dehumanizes people in our lives. And she used this whole kind of metaphor of we're our own thing because we're our own pearl, but the pearl reflects everything that's on the outside of it. So you both have kind of your solid core and your center, but you also have the reflections and the light coming at you from other people and what you send back to them. And really, she kind of made me make peace with that kind of teaching of mirroring with other people, where you don't necessarily lose yourself and you don't necessarily dehumanize somebody else's experience. And the idea that you're also the bag. So, you might have this beautiful pearl, but you got all this other junk in your bag, and you have to figure out, what am I keeping? What am I letting go? What's really me? What's not? And I don't think that's a metaphor for teaching I would have used, you know, so it's interesting that kind of seeped into it. And I don't think it's a metaphor that necessarily my teachers have used in that quite the same way.
It's interesting. I like that metaphor of, you know, the pearl is its own thing, but it does reflect, because, you know, yeah, we do kind of evolve and grow based off of the people we're around, the interactions that we have, and our experiences with other people. Because you mentioned it, how would you recommend to some of our listeners? We are very lucky with our podcast and our podcast group. I don't know how, but everyone is just so wonderfully lovely and supportive, and no one talks down to anyone. And we just lucked out to having such an amazing group of people who listen and who share with each other. But what advice would you give to someone who's listening who maybe does kind of find themselves in a conflict with someone within the witch community, how to best deal with that? Because I don't think anyone comes into this expecting to have to deal with like witch politics.
Right. I would use this advice for not just conflict, but for all the difficult things and all the good things. You have to look at everything as consciousness. And so if someone is bringing conflict and you're reacting to it, then what is it that I have to learn from this experience? And then once I learn it, even if you're learning it, doesn't mean the person's still not being a jerk and doesn't still have to be held accountable for that. And they've said something that's inappropriate. But if you get hooked into it, I think that's the biggest thing I notice is in the politics stuff. If I get hooked in, or somebody else I observe gets hooked in, there's something there for you. There's a space for you to be hooked. And what is that all about? You know, often the people who piss us off the most are the ones that really reflect, you know, our own foibles and our own problems. Or, you know, we see something in somebody else and we want to lash out at them even unconsciously. It's usually because we're lashing out at something in ourselves. So really looking at it, everybody's a teacher. You know, everybody's the witch at the edge of the village, and this whole story that they don't necessarily like the witch. But in the end, she turns that mirror, like the pearl, back out to them and kind of shows them themselves. So even if it's not their intention, I'm not saying people we have conflict are great gurus and everything, but unintentionally, there are teachers. Mm-hmm. So how can I get something from it? And the quicker I learn the lesson, the more I can get myself out of the uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah, I think that's dead on. Like, as you were talking about that, I was thinking of examples that I've, like, you know, witnessed in the world. And yeah, I've noticed that the people who are most at peace are the people who don't react or get involved or care about the crap that other people are maybe kind of throwing their way, you know?
I think we're required to care on a deep level for the big things, but don't care about the small things.
Exactly, because if you're wasting so much will or mind power and energy on the small things when the big things come, you have nothing for it, you know?
Exactly. 100% agree.
So one thing about the witch, so you talk about the character of the witch, and you say that, like, she evolved with the story, and that it was a process of learning, and that you learned some things, which was, that's really cool to hear as a writer, because, you know, like you said, you didn't go into it knowing that this was what you were going to produce. What are your thoughts on the concept of the muse? And would you consider the witch possibly your muse?
Since I just encountered her, you know, in the last couple of years, I'd say probably not, because I've written so much before that. I have sort of a classical image of the muse. And in the Temple of Witchcraft tradition, we actually work with a concept of the nine ladies. And you can look at the nine ladies as the nine ladies of Avalon or the nine muses, but they're kind of a otherworldly teachers that civilize. So that's how, when someone says magically, what's a muse, that's what I tend to go towards. But I get what you're saying about, like, the personal muse and that idea of the divine inspiration. So I don't know. I think in the end, she's less of divine inspiration and more teacher, you know. If I even had to put a magical concept to her, although I don't think it was entity channeling and that type of mediumship, but I think she's an expression of the witch soul. You know, there's a consciousness to witchcraft that we all participate in. That's the first witch, the last witch, every witch in between. And I think she was kind of coming out from that voice. So I think it's something internal to me, but I think it's also the part of me that connects with you as a witch, that connects with my coven mates, that connects with everybody who might identify with the W word.
I think there's something very powerful. And of course, this isn't really new to seasoned witches, but for any newer witches listening, how powerful the archetypes are, and how even just the consciousness we project onto archetypes really creates such a powerful energy that can be tapped into and that can be, you know, like, utilized. This book really offers a lot of lessons. My podcast assistant, Amanda, I'm sure everyone listening knows who she is, but we were going through your book together, and she started writing down, like, all the little lessons that, like, was in it. So out of all the little lessons in the book, which schools of thought, traditions, or practices would you say influenced these the most?
That's a great question. So, you know, I don't know if it's a specific school of thought, but I think it's the people I've encountered. I think it was a lot more personable for that. So I think it's my mentors and teachers. I think particularly, you know, a lifelong influence for me has been Lori Cabot and just her expression. She was my first serious teacher. I've received a lot of mentoring and had a really wonderful friendship with Raven Grimassi, and I can see some of his words in there. There was a while when I first started touring pretty heavily, so this is probably mid 2005, 6, 7, around there, where almost every event was some combination of me, Michelle Ballanger, Orion Foxwood, and Thorn Coil. You know, like, at least two of us would show up in these different places, and we take each other's classes and hang out and everything. And even though I haven't thought about those times in a long time, I can see those words and those ideas kind of seeping into it. Like, there's a whole section on self-possession in there, and I know Thorn Coil was really big upon that. And there's a whole aspect of nature and taming nature that was really about Raven that I could see kind of coming out. And, you know, some of it was really the standard things too. Like, I see little bits of Starhawk coming out and little bits of Victor Anderson, a little bits of Selena Fox. So I think it's really personally all the people have crossed my paths or whose books have crossed my paths, and I've had a chance to really kind of absorb and integrate.
Yeah, that's really amazing, because then people who read the book are really getting the energy of a lot of different witches within that writing. So, like we've said before, you've written over 24 books on witchcraft, which just blows my mind, because one is so hard. So the fact that 24 is wild. Do you have any rituals or techniques you use to, like, encourage kind of creative flow or writing sessions? Is there any type of, like, magical advice you can give to anyone who maybe is a writer or is, like, a different type of creative that they would want to incorporate?
For me, it's all about the magical will you know, and realizing that it serves a greater purpose or a greater mission. So when I start my day in general, but when I start, whether it be, you know, teaching and work or writing work for the day, I'll light a candle, I'll go to my altar, you might see it in the back here. And that idea of just kind of saying a prayer to be in alignment with my true will, my true purpose, particularly when I write or when I'm doing any type of new classwork, I'll light a candle to my matron, to the goddess Maka, and ask her to be present, because I feel like I wouldn't be doing this without her urging. And then just kind of let it flow from there. I have to say I'm very blessed, knock on wood, that I don't get struck by writer's block in the same way that a lot of people describe it. For me, it's almost the opposite. I feel like I'm on fire. And until I get out a good chunk of it, I can't rest and I can't feel at ease. And I'll go through processes where something sort of builds up and I have to just let it out on the page. And then once it's out in a first draft, I can let it go for a while. But I think while it's still in that ephemeral stage internally, I have to struggle to get it out, quick enough, because I feel like, you know, I can almost explode before it gets out. So I've not had the same thing, but for me, the daily rituals, the meditations, the lighting the candles really keeps things in alignment for me to not necessarily have to worry about the pace of it. You know, I know it'll all kind of come out because I trust in the divine process, but it's that requesting help and the lighting the candles is the big thing for me.
Yeah, I think it shows how even our mundane daily human rituals are so important. It prepares us to do the thing and do the work. And that's really simple, but I think it's something, it's advice I've heard for a lot of writers, you know, the idea of, you know, plan, you know, have this daily thing that you do almost like preparing to go to the office, but just for writing. That's tried and true advice from what I've heard. So you definitely have been around the block of like witchcraft. So I guess I just want to throw this way back. When did you start practicing?
I was 18 when I found my first teacher. So I'm now 47. So that was a bit of a while. I was coming out of Catholic school and I kind of left Catholic school as an agnostic, thinking there's something out there. And then a very good friend of mine who was my art teacher from when I was growing up the whole time, she was secretly a witch and never told us, because it was back in the day where you didn't tell people, you know? And then finally she waited till I was an adult legally and she, you know, revealed to me that she was a witch, and that's how I got started. So it was just as I was graduating high school and going into college.
Wow. You know, it's funny. Now that you said that there was like this art teacher who was secretly a witch, when I was coming up, it was still kind of the same. And, you know, from small town of like, you didn't talk about it. It wasn't something you talked about. So I think a lot of people who are like maybe in that, either a time where you didn't talk about it or a place where you didn't talk about it, I think we all can think of like one teacher who we think was probably a witch.
Exactly.
the Miss Frizzle type of teacher,
yep.
You know.
Yep, she was my art teacher, so yeah, like that.
So we do have a question from one of our listeners, and actually someone I'm pretty sure you and Kiki have taught at events together.
Oh yeah, we actually just spent some time in New Orleans together.
That's right, yes, I completely forgot, because you guys did the live interview for the Witch Way Facebook page.
Yep.
I remember, yes. But Kiki had a question. She says she would love to hear you talk about some of your favorite plant spirits, and she would love to know how you feel about the spirit of place and the mighty dead in New England.
Wow, those are great questions. So for plant spirits, I'd say my favorite, I divide them into healing plants or nourishing plants, poisonous plants, and trees. So for the healing plant, I love lemon balm. And that's just like the alchemist's herb. It just gently boosts your energy and boosts your mood and helps with all the things. You know, at my heart, I'm, you know, anxious person. I know having to deal with things in public and all that was not what I would have chosen. And I enjoy it, but it's still, you know, something that I don't always excel at. So lemon balm is really great for the nervous stomach, or you feel like you can't sleep at night or anything like that. It just has such a beneficent spirit. My favorite poison is Datura. Although mandrake is pretty up there as well. I've been growing mandrakes for the last 10 years or so, but Datura was my first love of poisons and was the first one to really kind of come to me, and just has such an enchanting scent, and just the witchiness of it, you know, like the thorny apples and, you know, the witch's thimble of the great trumpet of everything. I love that. And my favorite tree is oak. I think I go back to my teachers talking about how, you know, even though today we think of druids and witches as two separate things, and even in the ancient world, we're probably two separate things. The idea of our spiritual inheritance, if you're practicing a Celtic form of witchcraft, was inherited by the druids. So I always thought of the druids as my ancestors, and the idea of the oak tree playing such a prevalent role into that, and the oak being really the strength to stand tall and kind of withstand and to kind of court the lightning. That's probably my favorite tree spirit to work with. And then the mighty dead and spirits of place. That's a big one too. I live in New England. I live in New Hampshire. I studied in Salem, Massachusetts. I live in the other Salem of New Hampshire, and we've got a Stone Age site. So there's lots of old dead people here. And the idea that, you know, we have these layers, both from colonial times and then the layers of indigenous people that have been here. And then there's a whole group of indigenous people that predate all the tribes that we know of, that go back to some of these stone sites that, you know, vanished without a trace, and we don't really know who they were. I feel like connecting to the spirits, what we call the ancestors of bone and stone, the ones that are in the land, is a huge part. And I think that really influences my witchcraft. So the native people that have been in the area where the Salem, New Hampshire temple is, are the Abenaki people. And some of their mythology kind of comes into some of the visions people have, and we do deep work with the land here. So I find that really kind of interesting. And we work with the spirit locally. There's a lake very close to where we're at. And I don't know if it was tradition for the native people here, but the image of her appearing is almost like a spirit of the lake or goddess of the lake. But we use the indigenous name of Canopy to work with her. So that's a big way of kind of connecting to the ancestors of the land for us, and is an important part. You got to kind of be rooted with where you're at, but there's so many layers to it. You never know what's going to pop out.
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I think a lot of people need to spend more time doing, is getting really familiar with the land, the location in which they live. Because before I lived in New Orleans, still in a little bit of a historical place, but the idea of spirit of place and spirit of land exists, of course, and you understand it, of course, but until you're in a place that's really dense with that energy, I don't know if you quite appreciate it until it starts to affect you in some way.
And as you travel, you can, you know, if you're practicing as you travel, you get to feel the different places. Like, we have a mediumship style ritual that our community does called the Congress of the Bones. And it has a certain quality when we do it here. And we've done a couple of retreats down in New Orleans. So we did it once in New Orleans, and it was hilarious. We're in the community center down on Rampart Street after they moved. And there was music playing just as we started. They were having some type of concert in one of the rooms below, and it totally changed the vibe of everything.
Oh.
And the spirits that came through, like, we have very stuffy New England spirits that are very formal and like, here is your message. And, you know, if somebody, it's almost like a group seance where, you know, you speak for the spirits, and someone's like, what are all you people doing here? And I was like, yeah, that would never have happened in New England. Like, you know, it was just a character kind of came through of like, that really epitomized a flavor and a quality of New Orleans, even though we were guests, because we really did a lot of land work, and we did offerings to the land and brought in different local teachers. And so I felt like by the end of the week of the retreat, we really connected, and it really came through in that ritual.
That's, oh, I love that. Yeah, New Orleans, oh, yeah. Yeah, any place with just really dense spiritual energy, there's just nothing like it. Nothing.
I felt very similar to when I was in London, because I felt like that was such a level of history, but, you know, different quality, different ethos to it. But realizing like, oh, I'm having lunch in a bar that's older than my country. You know, that was kind of mind-blowing, and just, it felt like the spirits were just so present. And even though they weren't paying attention to you, they were just so present, because they're everywhere. You know, it's just so much history.
So let me tell you, I could talk about ghosts all day. So I'm not going to put you through that. But your book, The Witch's Hut, is on Amazon. I just pulled it up.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who, I will have a link in the podcast description, obviously. But if you do decide to search for it, it is a black cover. That always helps to when you're scrolling. So thank you so much for coming on. Was there anything that maybe we skimmed over, or anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to, you know, mention before you leave us?
Yeah, I think, you know, for the book, that was all great. And people want to check out some of the other stuff that I do. I have all my books on my website. So it's ChristopherPenzack.com. And Most of my work now is through our nonprofit at the temple. So if you want to find out where I'm at or what I'm doing, is templeofwitchcraft.org. And yeah, I think everything was really complete. So I appreciate you. Really great questions. It was nice chatting.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, so I'll have all those links in the description for anyone who wants to go check it out.
Witches, we hope that you have an amazing day filled with magic and inspiration. If you'd like to support the podcast, head on over to our Patreon. Need a support system? Find The Witch Daily Show on Facebook and our website, witchdailyshow.com.